Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, a weekly podcast for BJJ enthusiasts who are striving to succeed both on and off the mat. This podcast is brought to you by Roll Bliss Custom Kimonos, makers of the world's finest custom BJJ apparel. And here are your hosts on the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui.
Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life podcast. This is episode number 112.
We think,
yeah.
But we never claimed to be good at counting.
No, we did not. Yeah. We did not. And we're so far ahead because we just keep pumping out material like the podcast extraordinaires that we are. Uh-huh. We lose count.
That's right. And, you know, when you think about not being good at counting, I'm wondering, like, in business, why is it so difficult? Like, people look at the financials, and for me, it's just a matter of, like, and I've read books, and they're like, if you do this, you're an idiot, so I guess I'm an idiot. But I'm the guy that looks at the thing, and I'm like, I made $10,000 this month, or I made $15,000, you know what I mean? I don't have the pro forma, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
do you
use
pro forma?
No. I mean, and I think that you see this a lot in, like, apartments and stuff like that. And it's just 100% crap 100% of the time. It's
do
just
you do the
like,
same thing I do?
Yeah. Well, they're
I made money this month. I didn't make money this month.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I mean, and it's like, to me, there's many months where it's like, you know, we're at the 26th right now. How good of a month is it going to be? Still got 5 days to find out, everybody. Because it's like, you know, you get the call from the, I got the call or the text from the contractor like last night. Oh man, yeah, water lines clogged up or whatever. I'm like, well, this is either a $150 snake the lines problem or this is a $4,000 broken line problem. Grief. You know, hear back later from the property manager. Oh yeah, no, line's clear. All right, $150 problem. Month is still looking good. Had it been a $4,000 problem, not as good. So it's yeah. But yeah, they'd always do the pro forma stuff on apartment stuff, and it's just. I've even heard apartment brokers say, well, not to me, but to other people, well, you know what you're doing, so don't bother looking at our numbers. And I'm like, what? I don't know. So, yeah, I think that a lot of that stuff for, like, public companies and things like that, I think it's just to appease their investors. And then for, like, syndications and things like that, it's to present, like, the rosiest possible picture, again, for their investors. But if you're somebody who doesn't really have investors and stuff like that, you kind of know the reality, which is, dude, it's a bumpy ride. You never know. And I mean, I talk to people like my father-in-law is a good sort of mentor reference to have because he's been in business for 40 plus years and he's been very successful, but it's still like, oh yeah, we got this job for this. Okay. We got this. Like it's still always lining up deals. It's always minimizing expenses. It's like, cause I think if you kind of did that and showed it to people, it would be so less sexy that people would get way less excited about it. And since you're appealing to investors where you're really selling them the story of the deal rather than the reality of what doing this stuff is, you have to kind of give them the cool highlight real thing versus if you're just like, you know, so you see somebody's like in good shape. It's like, what do you do? Well, okay, I worked out today and yesterday and the day before, and I'm gonna work out tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that. And I'm going to obsess over how much protein I get today and tomorrow and the next, like, that's it. That's what I do.
But that's, you know, the discipline, right?
That's the thing. And it's, but it's like, that's not very exciting. It's not a good story.
It's not.
So it's like selling the story with the pro forma is different than selling the reality. Because if you look at pro formas, and again, coming from like a real estate point of view, if you believe those pro formas that they always show, why would anybody ever sell? It's like they're showing this thing. It's like, well, right now, it's bringing in $20,000 a month. But with just a little bit of work, it'll bring in $50,000 a month.
Yeah, like, and then my question is, well, why don't you keep it then?
Why are you selling it? Yeah,
exactly. Why are you selling it?
That's why I like dealing with the buyers directly or the sellers directly, because they're always like, oh, just got divorced. I owe this. This thing just blew. The entire toilet flooded the whole place. This guy, every time I try and get rent money, pulls a gun on me. Like, what? I mean, like, then you're like, this sounds awful. He's like, yeah, please take this place. And you're like, you know, I mean, like, you need like the real story. Like, and the real story is only by dealing with the day-to-day grind of owning property or running a business or whatever it might be. I mean, there's good stuff, but there's a lot of headaches and there's a lot of tough parts. And it's like, you need to catch somebody when they're at that point where they just can't deal with it anymore. They've hit that rock bottom moment.
That's your motivated seller.
That's when you need to catch them.
And that's where all business is made, right? Like, it doesn't matter if you're buying businesses, buying real estate, buying anything. When it comes to negotiating and when you want to get the absolute best deal, it's all about motivated sellers.
Yes. And the reality is almost everybody is there at some point with their business, their property, whatever it might be. And if somebody comes along right at that point, I there's plenty of deals I've had where if somebody come along and been like, hey, you want to sell this thing today? I'd be like, yes. Yes. You know, I mean, and sometimes I haven't and it's gone well. Sometimes I haven't and it's gone poorly. But, you know, yeah, there's been many times where I wish somebody had come up to me. So it's sort of a timing thing. And, you know,
there is no way to time that, right? That's why you just have to be consistent in your like direct mail and stuff like that.
I think so. I mean, you know, there can be things like you're looking at delinquent tax things.
How can you time when someone's going to have like the worst day of their life?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unless you're like in When Harry Met Sally, when they wanted to do obituaries tied in with real estate listings, it's like, you know, that it's pretty hard to. It is hard. I mean, that's why.
I thought you were gonna say Groundhog Day.
Right. Ned Ryerson.
Have all of the money.
Yeah, but no, it's like so like probate or like tax delinquent stuff or foreclosure. That's a little bit of something, and that definitely is one way of doing it. But problem is like everybody does that, so. To me, it's you can do that techniques, but it's like everything else. It's consistency. Like the more you consistently mail something, the more you're consistently out there marketing, that'll work over the long time. But it's not very like everyone wants to say like they've got this cool thing or they like split test different ink colors on this and they get this. And it's like, dude, it kind of goes back to that book that I read recently where it's like nobody knows anything. Experts are always wrong. And as we are seeing in the world today, the COVID-19 world, my, how things have changed, haven't they? New York, 20% of the people infected with COVID virus. That seems like millions of people have this thing. That means a mortality rate of 0.5%. Well, let's just keep shutting things down, shall we? You're telling me there's a 99.5% chance I'll live? Oh, I'm not going out of the house. No, sir. Oh, you mean I can punch somebody in the head and they can choke me unconscious? I'm in. Sign me up. So people are always wrong about these things. And the people that try and tell you that they know the secret marketing tips or this and that, usually they're selling something on the secret marketing tips and things like that. So they make things way more complicated than they need to be. Same thing with like personal trainers and people you see on YouTube. And like, there's all these guys that like, they'll complicate the crap out of everything. It's like the guy's like trying to learn how to squat. And they're like, oh, you can't squat because you've got these imbalances. You're turning a little bit. So we got to do an anti-turn rotation exercise first. And you got to learn this and that. And it's like all this stuff. And it's like, and then you listen to other guys that I think are more sensible. And they're like, or you could just squat more because you'll probably get better at squatting by squatting more. So. You know, it just depends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jordan Peterson.
Is that what we're talking about today?
You brought it up.
All right.
12 rules.
And you know what? I have never read the book.
Okay.
But I was just absorbing content.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a lot else to do. Yeah. And so why not try, you know, you should try to be getting better, right? Like try to sharpen yourself. So I'm absorbing content. I'm reading. You know, always reading. I love to read, but now you can read a lot more. And I'm watching a lot more YouTube videos, but on like, that's the thing about technology. And look, that's the thing that I'll always go back to, you know, once we get past COVID-19 completely and hopefully, but once we get past it completely, I'll always go back to the silver lining is technology.
Yeah.
Because where would all of us be right now if we didn't have technology to be able to communicate the way you and I are communicating now? I mean, we're talking about businesses being shut down. Not completely. There's actually a lot of people that are thriving because of the technology that exists, right? And if you didn't have that, it's like in the dark ages.
I have a counter argument though.
What is it?
Do you think all this I was going to say hysteria, but that would be the wrong word.
People are so sensitive, man. Yeah, but we're not going to be politically correct. Yeah, you say what's on your mind.
I kind of wonder, without technology, would all this hysteria exist? So if we didn't have social media, Twitter, this, that, things that where, okay, when you have...
Let's look back at history.
Yeah. When you have thousands of people dying from something and you have like a few healthy people and you have numerous articles by major news factions that have highlight this young, healthy person who died from this disease. What if you didn't have that technology? What if you would have to pick up a newspaper and maybe it would be a local newspaper, it would never go nationwide or whatever. Cause it's like, if you didn't know, like, is ignorance bliss in a case like this? Cause it might be, cause I don't know. It's cause I wonder, you're right. There's no way that we would be able to get through this without technology. But I also wonder, would all this be happening without technology? Because the world is so sort of united in its panic in something, is that because of the something, or is it the fact that because everything's united that you can sort of start this like, you know, rolling ball down the hill of panic that everyone gets sucked into? I don't know. I mean, and again, the thing that's with something like this, we won't know until it's over. And then when it's over, it might be something like, wow, we overreacted. Or it's like, well, you know, we did the appropriate thing. Or more than likely, what I think is the reality is that you're making the decisions that make sense at the time with the information that you have. When you get new information, maybe you should make new decisions. Or maybe you should just put dirt in skate parks and, you know, keep shutting down Venice Beach. It's fine, whatever. So yeah, I to me, it's just that sort of was something like that. So I kind of wonder.
Well, let's think through it though, because it's like an infinite argument. And let me just say, and I think most arguments are infinite arguments, especially if someone doesn't want to be wrong. I hate people like that.
Yes.
People that will just argue irrational stuff just because they don't want to be proven wrong. It's ridiculous. Yes. Yeah. Right. Which Jordan Peterson has a good comeback on that, right? He's like, what does he say? Don't throw pearls to swine. Like, just stop talking. Don't talk to those people. They don't really want to listen to what you have to say, and just start observing what they're doing. But in terms of that infinite argument, like, there's also the other side of the argument where intelligence, if you will, right? Like, intelligence, if you will, can help us avoid, like, it can, like, if you had certain technology that could have seen the iceberg before the Titanic hit it, right? And then you're getting that information quicker, so you can make decisions that will help you steer away from the iceberg.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that, like, do you shut down technology and then just kind of get information slowly?
Right.
But the problem, again, what you're saying and what I agree with is that it's not necessarily information that we're getting. It's just people panicking and making decisions off of knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah. And that's that book, The Signal and the Noise, because when you have more technology, you have more noise, and it becomes a little bit harder to figure out what the signal is. And social media is a weird thing, because it's like, I see it like, again, I took like a little social media break for about a week, which I highly recommend. And then I really just do social media for business and jujitsu stuff, as we've talked about. Every once in a while, I catch myself reading, like, whatever you call it, scrolling down. And it's interesting, because there's people that like will like make these declarations, and they're people that I know, or people sort of like that I vaguely know from the Facebook world or whatever. Most of these people are not famous people. In fact, I would be so insulting as to say they are saying things that they are not qualified to say, that in any other time of history, they would be saying this at a bar or whatever to the people who had to hear them, you know, around them, or they would be saying it to their kids or their family and nobody else, because nobody would listen to them. But now it's like this weird platform.
Everybody's an expert.
So everyone has a platform. So now everyone has an opinion. So now everyone types out their opinion. And then you have people going back and forth, arguing this opinion, doing all this stuff. And that's again why I highly recommend using social media only for very specific things, if you need to. And if you don't, I recommend not using it at all, because when you're plugged into that, that whole thing becomes very stressful and very like argumentative, and it turns into this very quick negative downward spiral. And then when you get away from it for just even a few days, you're like, why was I? It's like getting out of a bad relationship or you know, something like that, or getting out of a cult or something. And then all of a sudden you're like, why was I ever falling for this? Why did I ever care about this at all? So, but yeah, it's because it's a weird thing, because back in any other time in history, for you to really know somebody's opinion, you either they either had to be like super loud and obnoxious somewhere public, somebody you knew, or somebody who had sort of earned the right to speak. Like they were a writer, they were somebody published, they were somebody writing in a newspaper. They had gone through enough hoops and sort of there was a barrier to entry, so that if they actually had an opinion that you were reading, it was maybe an opinion worth reading because they had done something to earn that. Or they were somebody on TV. It was not easy to get on TV back then. So it sort of merited a little bit more listening. Maybe it was more of a signal. Now there's infinite ways to get your opinions out there. Podcasting, YouTube, whatever it might be, Facebook. So because of that, it's like now everyone has an opinion and everyone can put it out there. So it's just, and then it amplifies, because now you have people back and forth and this and that, and there's confirmation bias and there's all these other things that just go back and forth and back and forth. And it gets more difficult to just sort of look at facts, try and figure out what they mean first versus what seems to happen on the news, sort of on both sides of the aisle politically. Is that people say, okay, the world is like this. I will take this information and show how it proves that the world is like this, versus what it theoretically should be. You take the information and try and figure out what the information means. You know what I mean? It's backwards the way it's done. It's taking whatever it is and fitting into a narrative versus figuring out what the narrative is by what's happening.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. So let's do it. First one is, you know, first of all, I understand that it's a double-edged sword. We, to a certain degree, the government is necessary, sure. Right? And, yeah. And, but it's always that balance between,
it is,
giving them too much power, yeah. And taking, and whether or not we have enough rights. And so yeah. In the beginning, I understand the fact that when it becomes national security, or it becomes like it's a pandemic and we need to save lives. So the government's going to implement these policies to try to save lives.
Yeah.
But at what point does it go too far? Because, you know, in the beginning, I think everybody was on board. Like, yes, we're all going to do what we need to do to make sure we help our fellow Americans or fellow human beings, whoever. Sure. Right. But now.
Yeah.
It's almost getting to the point where people have already started to push back. And they're like, I'm not closing down my business.
Yeah, they have. You know? And I think, you know, it feels like you can kind of feel the momentum and the sort of the tipping points of things. And when everything closed before, like I had very mixed feelings about it. Now, I made the mistake of watching the movie Contagion, which I told you about, which is a good movie. And it's interesting to see movies like that. And then I just watched World War Z last night, which is interesting because that's like a more comic book idea of this, but it's still the same idea of like there's this pandemic.
Take out the teeth.
Yeah, right.
It's the greatest feat of social engineering ever.
That's what North Korea did. So, you know, there's sort of different things, but it's like when you have that sort of pandemic, that was the fear going in, I think, back a couple months ago, was like, oh my God, like what if this is something like the Spanish flu? And the Spanish flu to me was scary for a couple reasons, but the main one was the Spanish flu was killing young, healthy people. The majority of people who died from the Spanish flu were ages 20 to 40. And for the most part, you would get symptoms and you'd be dead within a day, sometimes dead within 12 hours. So it's like, I don't feel good. Boom. 12 hours later, you're dead. Like that's the way this thing went. So it killed like 3 or 4% of the world's population, estimates 50-100 million people in about a year and a half. That's terrifying. That's like, especially if you adjusted it for today's numbers, that would be probably over, 300 million people or something like that. Like almost the population of this country dead in a year and a half. That's terrifying. So,
you know, it's funny because we were going to talk about Jordan Peterson, and he says he talks about this a little bit, but he doesn't talk about it in reference to COVID-19. It's simply about how that, you know, for example, he was talking about how the majority of certain civilizations were wiped out from diseases
absolutely.
That they didn't have a built up immune system to.
He uses
Native Americans as an example.
This country is a prime example of that. Like, and that was killed way more people than any of the wars. And actually, really, most wars, I want to say until World War II, the majority of people that were killed in most wars throughout modern history were killed by disease, not by.
So is it logical for people to be fearful?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was scared. I mean, I think anybody who says they weren't concerned or scared is, I mean, they're tougher than me. I'll put it that way.
But now you think there's enough data to begin to start to question some of our
Because the thing is, with policies. All these things, you have to look at, like, what's the blowback? What are the side effects? What is the disease worse than the cure? And there's an interesting interview with these two doctors out of Kern County, which is in California. It's actually the same county my in-laws live out there in Kern County. So I'm familiar with the area. It's kind of central California. It's the part of California that gets no love at all. There's like a lot of farmland. It's very working class. It's very like, it's not at all what you think of with California. People think of California as either like San Francisco, Northern California, like sort of snooty, snobby, whatever, and then Southern California, very beachy and sunny and Hollywood and all that. But there's Central California, which Bakersfield and you know, all that kind of stuff. So they were talking and you know, they really started analyzing numbers and actual death rates. And now that we're seeing more and more what the actual percentage of population that's most likely already infected with COVID and all that, it should probably change what they do. And what the remark that they made that really stuck with me is they said, in almost every other pandemic in human history, and we've had terrible pandemics besides just the Spanish flu, what happens even back in biblical times is the sick are quarantined. Like when you talk about leprosy, which it seems like that was the disease back in the day, leprosy. There's a lot of jokes back when I was a kid too. I don't know if like the truly tasteless jokes had a lot of poorly tasteful leprosy jokes. Anyway, whatever. I was the only one apparently. Mo was a saint. But anyway, back then the people that were sick were quarantined. What they were saying, what's different about this time is you have healthy people that are quarantined, and they're like, that's never happened. So that's them saying that. I have not researched this. I just watched this video on YouTube and I got outraged and I said this is fact. Now I'm realizing I don't know. I could be completely wrong. But it does seem at a certain point, you got to weigh the pros and cons and realize that there's risk in everything. And if the idea is like, okay, this thing could still kill you if you go outside, it's like, to me, it's like, okay, I'll sign a waiver then because I need to get on with my life. And I think it's also the weird thing that's been pitted is that if somebody's running a business like you and I do, that takes so much time to build up, so much energy, so much money, so much of your life. It becomes this hugely defining part of you. And to be successful in a business, and what I mean by successful is just that the business is still around, is difficult. I mean, most people that start businesses fail. Most restaurants that start fail. Most ghee companies that start fail. I mean, you are in an elite category just for the fact that your company has been around for over 5 years. I mean, that is elite in the jiu-jitsu world. So to get all that and then to not be allowed to do your thing or to have your, you know, potential buyers just completely dry up through no fault of your own, not because like, there was, you know, you overspend on something or you took a risk that didn't work or you got over leveraged or whatever it might be through no fault of your own, to have that taken from you. And then to have a lot of like news media act like you're being a brat or like a spoiled child, or what are they like? Oh, you want to get a haircut or whatever they're saying. It's like, no, I want to continue to do this thing. That's my life's work that's being taken from me against my will. Against like not through no fault of my own. And the only solace you're saying to me is, oh, well, you can get government money. And it's like, well, that's not what I want. I want to continue to do the thing. I don't want to take money from anybody. I want to make money for people.
It's so funny because I was listening to something from Robert Kiyosaki.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was funny. He said stimulus is welfare for the rich.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. And it, you know, I mean, it's crazy because it's like this idea of like, waiting around for this. Yeah, it's almost exactly what it is. It's like, you know, first of the month, I'm waiting for my check type thing. And it's like, dude, that's not, I mean, again, that can last for a little while, but it's like, man, it's coming up on May and this just cannot continue. It just can't. And the good thing I think is that the momentum, like what I was saying back in, you know, a couple, like a month and a half ago, whenever all this started, the momentum was there. Like, even if you were like, ah, I don't know. It's like, man, okay, but I could be wrong. You know what I mean? It's like I didn't want my gym to close. I didn't want, you know, the jiu-jitsu school to close or whatever, but I'm like, but I just watched Contagion. I've seen World War Z. What if this is what we're happening? I don't want
to
be.
You don't know. So it's better to be safe than sorry, right? Safe than
sorry. But it's like, now I feel the momentum's coming where it's like, okay, we've got some real data. We've got enough Correct. Data to really understand the real morbidity of this and all this kind of stuff. This is risky, but it's not nearly as risky as we thought. And what is risky, because it's like, okay, so I'll tell you a little whatever story. There's a guy who was one of the managers at the gym I go to, the weightlifting gym. And like a lot of those guys, they're like, they're gym rats is the sort of term that they usually use. They're guys who like hang out at the gym. They work at the gym. They're big buff bodybuilder guys. Like, it's a huge part of their life. In many cases, it is their life, right? And this gym closes, like all gyms have. And I don't know what was going on with this dude. I've never really even talked to this guy, whatever. Long story short, he killed himself last weekend. And I guarantee that, like, there's some statistic I saw where they said for every 1% of unemployment, suicide rates go up around 1% or something like that. You know, drug overdoses go over a certain point. Like, all these things have consequences. Like, healthy people that want to work should not be stuck at home. There is nothing good that's going to come from that. And you know, it's a, you can take this from a global thing too. If you want to look at a lot of countries in the Middle East where there's a lot of terrorism and stuff like that, there's enormous unemployment of young men. And this is something that Jordan Peterson talks about a lot, about young men, about the, like, the danger of misguided young men. It's like the biggest danger in any society. And when you have massive unemployment of young men, like you do in a lot of Middle Eastern countries, we have 25-30%. I don't know the unemployment we got right now at the moment, but when you have that unemployment for long periods of time of young men, there will be violence. There will be anything bad you can imagine. So healthy young people should not be unemployed, should not be sitting at home. Like, that's just, it's a recipe for disaster throughout history, throughout any society you want. So, so there's a lot of consequences to it. And I think that that's becoming more of a reality. Now the numbers are coming in. So I think that the momentum's changing. That's what it feels like. Because now people are getting real data, and people that are smart, people who know how to read data and things like that, people obviously a lot smarter than me, are coming to that conclusion. So I think the momentum's changing. And I mean, I think people made the best decisions they could make given the time. It was scary. And it's like, good God. I mean, who wants to be part of a pandemic? Because the only thing we've seen in movies, we don't see the movies where it's like, it was a pandemic and, you know, the death rate went up 0.5% or whatever. It's like, no, it's a pandemic. The zombies are super fast in this one, and they could run and catch a helicopter and pull a helicopter down. A whole city gets nuked
like
in 20
minutes.
Like a zombie
chain.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And it's like, man, I mean, nobody wants that. I don't want that. So, I mean, yeah, it's a little.
He was like, how did you know cutting off my arm would work? He's like, I didn't, baby.
I didn't. Yeah, I had some issues with that. I'm like, hey, come on. I mean, if it's going to turn you into a zombie in 12 seconds and you cut. I don't know.
Hey, man. You're because not a doctor, man.
That's assuming that the blood's going just this way. What if the blood's going this way already? He'd have to cut it off at the shoulder or something like that, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. Plus, the part of that movie that really angered me is when his wife calls him. That really And the fact that he forgot to.
Yeah. Put it on silent, dude. Come on. Come on, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt made
a lot of zombies.
He made a lot of mistakes now. He's like kicking the Coke can. He's stepping on glass. I'm like, I thought you were some like hotshot security guy or whatever. Watch where you're walking. Come on, Brad. Cut your stupid hair and watch where you're walking. Come on, Brad Pitt. You can do better.
You know what actually is scaring me now is not COVID-19. What's scaring me now just a little bit is, and I don't want to cause any more hysteria than what's already out there.
No, let's do it.
I fear that I'll wake up one day and the money I have in the bank will not be worth anything.
That's scary, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, you think about it, right? Like, I've never, I don't remember in any time in history where we're just printing money.
Printing money. Yep. Yep.
And I think historically, whenever you've done, I mean, it's just massive common inflation. Sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You devalue your money.
Yeah. No, I know.
It's time to start buying some gold and silver and some
maybe
real estate.
Maybe some oil. Don't they pay you to buy oil now? How does that work? Like, they're like, oil is like negative $20 a barrel. I'm like, how does that even work? Like, but apparently the big problem is storage right now. So I'm like, where can we find places to store oil? How can we get in on this opportunity?
Yeah. But, you can store it at my house. $20 a barrel.
You can pay me money to store oil at my house. Fine. Done. So yeah, I don't know, man. I think that, I think things will calm down and get back to relative normal pretty quickly, because I don't think there was, I mean, the oil issue, I don't know much about oil. I'm definitely not an oil guy, so I don't know enough to comment on that. But I know, like, people are worried about real estate values and things like that. And I'm like, man, the markets are still strong. Like, properties are still selling fast, like here in Austin.
But I think commercial, I hear that commercial properties what's taking the hit.
It may take a hit, but I think the commercial properties in terms of like office and stuff, like, I think multifamily is okay. I think offices and some other stuff, it may be in trouble, but that was in trouble before the pandemic. Like, all that stuff was before. So it's like, to me, if the fundamentals are strong, it's just like, you know, maybe the analogy is like, this is a bad injury, but you're still healthy. Otherwise, you're still doing all the right things. You can come back from this. Like, this country can come back from this. I'm very confident of that. I think some other countries that were already in trouble are going to be in real trouble. But I think that our country relatively quickly will get back on track. I mean, that's my feeling, because I don't think that anything was really inherently wrong with it. Versus 2008, it's like, man, you had a house of cards with the, you know, credit default swaps and the way these things were done, that, and these companies were so over leveraged in the idea that this will never happen. The thing that will never happen happened. So it's not like we were all shorting on a pandemic. You know what I mean? It's sort of a different situation than it was in 2008.
So how do you offset the devaluation of the currency?
Man,
how
I don't,
do you,
that's
a, yeah,
that's
how do you come question. Back from that? And I want to see how that plays off in the long, because right now you're not going to feel the effects.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, money's going to be printed. I mean, the effects of that happen way off in the future.
They do. And I mean, but that's been a problem for a long time. You know what I mean? That is obviously, that was a big bump in that problem, but
is it a problem for, maybe it won't affect us as much because it's a problem for everyone else as well, because everybody's printing money.
That's the thing. That's why I think this is different, is because it's like, because everybody was affected, unless you were really teetering on the brink already. So in other words, like, you see some of these people where it's like, a month and a half in and they're basically done, man, that was, something was already wrong. This is obviously an unforeseen thing, but if you had something where, because the way I would put it is, let's say this same person, you know, even someone like Grant Cardone, who's known, you know, he's fired a bunch of people and people keep saying he's going bankrupt. I don't know if that's true. I don't think that's true, but whoever it might be, well, you know, if you were somebody where, if you just were in the hospital for a couple months, your whole business would tank or whatever. It's like, man, that's already dicey. Like, that's already not really prepared for a disaster. Obviously, this is a disaster far beyond the scope of what most people would anticipate. But to me, if your business is about to go out of business after a month and a half, like some of the restaurants here that have gone out of business and things like that, that's pretty narrow already. That's pretty narrow. I mean, like, so it's like Threadgills went out of business in Austin. That's I've never been there.
But you know, and I know for people like me and you, you know, we think different. Like, I mean, I know that I think to have, if I can, to have a year. Now, that's a lot of money to be lying around. I remember I talked to one of my other mentors and he was like, Mo, that's way too much money just to be having around. You should be investing it. But, you know, I wanted to have a year, but now I'm at least at 6 months, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the norm.
It's not.
I think most people put themselves 3 months, if that.
Yeah. Yeah. The person that I want to listen more to now is Dave Ramsey, because Dave Ramsey's always said that. He's always said, like,
well, let me ask you this then. So is it far-fetched to think people like Grant Cardone are going bankrupt? Because remember, there's two sides. People like Grant Cardone and Robert Kiyosaki, they're very big into making millions with other people's money.
Yeah.
And in a time like this, those are probably going to be the people that get affected. I would think so, right? Because you're making money off of debt.
And that's the problem with the analogy I always go back to with leverage. You have all these guys that talk about leverage as a good thing. And it can be. I mean, it can be and what we mean by leverage is, let's say you want to buy a $1 million building. So you put in $200,000 or you raise $200,000 through a syndication and you borrow the $800,000, you buy the $1 million building. Okay, yeah, you can buy something that you couldn't afford to buy with cash. But leverage works two ways, because that means you owe $800,000. And if you're syndicating, that means you also are owing returns for that $200,000. So you owe returns and money for $1 million now on something that you think and hope will keep making money. Now, in a situation like this, the people that were paying you that money, now all of a sudden they're not making any money. So all this money that you owe just to stay even is drying out. And then you needed to make all this extra money to pay returns and stuff like that. And that's drying out too. If you aren't leveraged on something, then number one, you don't owe money on it. And number two, you most likely don't have partners. Or even if you do, even if you're bringing in 50%, if you've only got one or two partners, you probably can still square up with them. You may not be making profit, but you're not owing anybody money. And the argument is, well, you don't move as fast and you can't scale up as fast. But if you go up super fast, a lot of times I've seen it, people go down super fast too. It's the slow and steady idea in my mind is better. And getting back to the leverage analogy, in jiu-jitsu, we use the idea of leverage all the time. And when you're arm barring somebody, man, leverage is great. Look at that guy grimace. You can just hold it and you do a little thing. And you're holding it. You do that. Like, let's say you're training against somebody like Coco or whatever. So you're arm barring Coco for like the 10th time in like 5 minutes. And he's screaming. He's like, I'm never going to get my brown belt. And you're like, yeah, you're right. And you're doing all that. It's great. But from Coco's point of view, leverage is terrible. Because you can't, Coco's kind of strong, but I mean, you know, you can't use your massive strength or whatever. You can't do any of that stuff. You're getting on over and over again. So leverage is terrible. So it's like, leverage is great when the economy is going well, when you're bringing money, all this stuff. But the reality is, you owe a lot of money, and people you owe money to, as we've all seen in mobster movies and everything else, they usually want the money back with interest.
Isn't that what happened in 2008, right?
It is. Cause you had all these people that the problem, and I saw it coming up in multifamily as well, is that people assume that you can either refinance or you can sell the property quickly. And at a time like right now, neither one of those things is going to happen quickly. You are not going to refinance quickly. You might be able to sell quickly to somebody like me who's going to look for a bargain, but to sell at top dollar, that may be tougher. Just because the lenders are so backlogged now, because everyone's trying to refinance, everyone's doing this. Plus banks are just overloaded with people looking for, you know, renegotiate loans and do all these different things. So things are not moving quickly right now. Plus everyone who's working at a bank can't even go to work. So it's backlog upon backlog upon backlog. But assuming that you can always sell, assuming that rents are always going to go up, assuming that all these things are going to happen, they don't happen consistently. Over the long term, they do. But when you look at long-term and you start zooming in, there's a lot more of this. It goes up when you look at it from afar, but when you look at it close, it's a lot more zigzag, up, down, up, down, up, down. And if you can't deal with the down part, this is where people go bankrupt and go out of business. And it happened before, it's happening again. It seems to happen every 10 years or so. You think about it, because there's 2008, which I went through. Now, there was also 1999. Now, that I wasn't affected with at all. I was never in the tech world or anything like that. But there was tons of people that went bankrupt in 99 and 2000.
There was also a bunch of people that partied because it was 99.
Yeah, I did too. It was pretty good. It's pretty solid. It's like on a Coco scale, it's a 7 out of 10. So that's good. Even before, there was a lot of oil. There was savings and loan scandal in the 80s. I mean, like in the 70s, there was terrible recessions and horribly high interest rates.
But I think you said it though, Carter, right? Like, so you have people like Dave Ramsey, and then you have people that are on there and who they've made money, right? Yeah. Dave Ramsey's made money. Yeah. And then you have people like Robert Kiyosaki, and it's just two different strategies. It's and different with strategy. Both those strategies, you have to ask yourself, the greater the risk, the greater the reward, but also the greater the risk, the greater the fall, right? So you got to find that balance and find out what you can tolerate. And I'm definitely a type of person. I'm middle of the road. I'm not 100% Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
But I'm closer to Dave Ramsey than I would be someone like Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. I don't like And also that's a luxury that we have. The fact that we're able to buy things cash for the most part. You know, that's a luxury not everybody has, right? Because some people are trying to get into the business and they're like, how do I do it? And really, if you don't have any money, the way to do it is by using other people's money. But I think that that's a strategy you get away from as soon as you can. I actually like, that's one thing I like about John Fedro. He's like, I don't use other people's money. I'm a creative deal maker. I'll owner finance a lot of stuff.
Because I think that, building up cash, because let's put it this way. I would much rather be in a situation like we're in right now. I'd much rather be Dave Ramsey than Robert Kiyosaki.
100%.
And that's 100%. What this, it's interesting because it's like, we're going to learn as we go what lessons we really retain from this whole situation. Because to me, it's like, there's already things that I've realized that I've learned and things I took for granted. I didn't even think I took for granted. And number one is like the freedom of just being able to do stuff that you want to do. And it's weird to have that taken from you, even for a little while, because life is short. And as much as people are like, yeah, you can get back to this thing eventually, I mean, not everyone's going to make it to that eventually. You know what I mean? Like, it's this weird thing. And I look at that from like a training perspective. I look at that from just a, like, spending time with people. Like, it's weird. You watch stuff from like even a few months ago where people are like hanging out together in braces. No one's wearing a mask. No one's social distancing. We didn't even know what that term meant. Flattening the curve, because we didn't know what that, well, probably knew what that term meant, but it certainly meant something different.
That was, to me, I thought that was the same thing as gleaming the cube.
Yeah, right. A made up term. You gleam the cube. I skated back then.
Sounds like something Coco does. Yeah. I'm kidding. I love Coco.
Solid film though, but still. So, there's definitely be things that we learn from all this, but for me, kind of going through this made me very glad that I had minimal leverage and minimal debt. And cause I was kind of at a crossroads even right before this
and
happened.
You lucky dog, because didn't you drop all your stocks also?
I did a little over a year ago. Yeah. So, and I invested in just Chinese laboratories right after that too. I'm just kidding. No, but
I think the SEC is listening in on this.
No. So,
I'll be visiting amazing. You in federal prison.
thank you for visiting too. I do appreciate that. But I think that, you know, as we go along, we're going to learn lessons and things like that. But for me, I was at a crossroads where I was looking at a lot of big property, a lot of big short-term rentals and all that. And I'm so glad I didn't do that. And it's weird because once I realized, I'm like, yeah, I don't think that business model is going to work. When I would go out looking for that type of property, when I would start looking online, all of a sudden I didn't feel any enthusiasm for it. And then when I started looking at all the land stuff and the things that I'm doing, like that I'm moving towards now, it's like, ooh, that sort of enthusiastic, exciting, I'm on the hunt for deals feeling came back.
I like that. What I'm taking away from the podcast right now, and it's something that I've taken away from other jobs that I've had that have led to success, and that's listen to your gut.
Yeah.
I think there's something to that, being intuitive and instinct.
I agree.
Listening to your gut. Yeah. I think the times where, going back to our, the previous podcast, some of the worst deals is when I didn't listen to my gut.
Exactly. My Chantel's always said that. My wife's always said that to me. Like, I get in trouble when I don't listen to my gut. And it's partly like learning to have the confidence to do that, because it's like, I'm a very,
I like that.
Non self-believing person a lot of the times, because it's like, I've done a lot of stupid stuff in my life, man. And I'm a kind of an idiot when it comes to a lot of things.
So it's George Costanza, like, you got to do the, you think you should be doing the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And I'm like, but I don't even know if I, but now I'm taking my advice from a TV show. You know what I mean? Like, so it's all that. So, learning to, that's what really this whole situation has made me realize, is I have to trust my gut, because my gut on certain deals that were coming up and certain possibilities, I'm like, for whatever reason, like, I'm finding this like a chore to want to do, and I don't want to live my life that way, and I don't want to do it. But at the time, I thought I was being lazy, or being like, okay, I don't want to take a big risk, big reward or whatever. And then when all this COVID stuff started happening, I'm like, no, I made the right choice. And so now it's made me much more confident in going, okay, I know what I do well. I like doing smaller, low risk things, because I've done big risk things. I barely escaped. Then 2008 happened and all this stuff. I don't want to do it anymore. And it's not because I'm living out of fear or whatever. It's like, no, I want to do something that, okay, no one's doing anything right now. I'm absolutely looking for deals. I'm definitely buying deals right now. Okay, everyone's doing stuff. cool, I'm absolutely looking for deals right now. Like, it doesn't change. Like, the good, the bad, it doesn't change with certain things that are reliable, consistent, low price, less competition. That's just, to me, that's the business I want to be in. That's the business I've been in for the last like 10, 11 years. And when I started looking at shifting, I'm like, well, now there's tons of people doing this stuff. There's way more risk. There's all these questionable buying things. And then boom, when all this stuff happened, I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't do it. Cause like, I trust my gut. And like, once I got back to it, it's like, oh, feels good, man. I'm excited. Yeah, no, we're about ready to kick off something big in the next week or so. We're building up our list, refining the list. I've been listening to Cocaine Cowboys when I'm doing my list making, which is like, oh, one of the greatest movies ever made. So it's exciting to kind of sort of believe in all that and just be excited to get back to it. So, yeah, I think learning how to trust your gut is important. But I think also being honest and being like Costanza, are my instincts good or are they bad? Because if they're bad, it's like, okay, you can make adjustments from that. But if they're good, then you got to trust them, because it's like, man, it's so easy to get swept again, going back to technology and social media and all that. Because when I got back into Facebook, it was like first when I got into multifamily stuff. So I have hundreds of Facebook quote unquote friends of people who literally have never met or even seen in person before that are like these multifamily people. And I started realizing like this whole apartment investing world is sort of its own like universe. And there's people that are quote unquote famous in this universe. And I'm like, are they actually good at what they do? Are they just good at being well known in what they do? And the difference is that it comes down to, there's people that are deciding, because this person is well known and charming, I will invest my hard-earned money with this person. And there's some that seem to merit that. And there's others where it's like you look at their property or talk to people or listen to them talk or listen to the people that have worked for them talk, and you're like, wow, like this is a con. Like these people are like, this is sort of a suit and a tie and nothing else type of thing, or all hat, no cattle, or all sizzle, no steak, or whatever you want to say. So it's scary to see there's a lot of people in that kind of business. So, I don't know. I think that's the struggle with something like this, is to, how do you turn this all into a positive? And it's been interesting, even going back to Facebook or whatever, there's a guy named Alex Assad, who's a tattoo artist that I know from Ryan Villalobos' school and from Rudy and stuff like that. He's a local guy and competes in jiu-jitsu and all that. And it was, he said like he's decided he wants to start like doing sort of life coaching for people. He's had like some really interesting epiphany from this whole situation. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of revelations people get from this, because you know there's life-changing things that are happening, but all that being said, it needs to end now or soon, because enough is enough.
Listen to your gut.
Yeah,
episode 112. Yeah. Something
we didn't talk about Jordan Peterson at all.
That's all right, this was good stuff. To check out this episode and our older episodes, go to thejujitsuoflife.com. Also, be sure to check us out and subscribe on Apple iTunes and leave us a review, since you got nothing but time on your hands. Also, check out Robles.com, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. And you should, you know, continue to support your jiu-jitsu academies wherever there are in the country. If you want some supplemental training, check out Jiu-Jitsu on the Go. I'm Mo. That's Carter. As always, we thank you guys for tuning in, and we wish you guys nothing but the best, both on and off the mat. Have a great week.
Thank you, guys.
That's it for this episode of the Jiu-Jitsu of Life. Your hosts are Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui. This podcast is brought to you by Robles Custom Kimonos, makers of the world's finest custom BJJ apparel. You can subscribe to the Robles newsletter to get exclusive content at www.roblesgi.com. You can find more episodes of this show at our website, thejujitsuoflife.com. And you can subscribe at Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we wish you a great week, both on and off the mat.